in such sacrificial ceremonies.
Hare,
the Supreme Lord.
Bhagavan,
the Personality of Godhead.
Ijamanaha,
being worshipped.
Ija
Atma,
the soul of all worshipable deities.
Murti, in the forms.
Yajatam,
those who worship.
Sham,
welfare.
Tanoti,
spreads.
Kaman,
desires.
Amoghan,
inviolable. Stirajangamanam, of all the moving and non-moving.
Antaha,
within.
Bohihi,
outside.
Vayuhu,
air.
Eva,
like.
Eshaha,
of all of them.
Atma,
spirit soul. Translation: in all sacrificial ceremonies, although sometimes a demigod is worshipped, the Supreme Lord, Personality of Godhead, is worshipped because He is the Supersoul of everyone and exists both inside and outside like the air. Thus, it is He only who awards all welfare to the worshipper. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. It is even sometimes seen that demigods like Indra and Chandra are worshipped and offered sacrificial awards. Yet, the awards of all such sacrifices are awarded to the worshipper by the Supreme Lord. And it is the Lord only who can offer all welfare to the worshipper. The demigods, although worshipped, cannot do anything without the sanction of the Lord, because the Lord is the Supersoul of everyone, both moving and non-moving. In Bhagavad Gita 9.23, the Lord Himself confirms this in the following shloka. Ye pyanya devata bhakta yajante shodayan vitaha te pimam eva kaunteya yajantya vidipurvakam. Whatever a man may sacrifice to other gods, O son of Kunti, is really meant for me alone, but it is offered without true understanding. End quote. The fact is that the Supreme Lord is one without a second. There is no God other than the Lord Himself. Thus the Supreme Lord is eternally transcendental to the material creation. But there are many who worship the demigods like the sun, the moon, and Indra, who are only material representatives of the Supreme Lord. These demigods are indirect, qualitative representations of the Supreme Lord. A learned scholar or devotee, however, knows who is who. Therefore, he directly worships the Supreme Lord and is not diverted by the material qualitative representations. Those who are not so learned worship such qualitative material representations, but their worship is unceremonious because it is irregular. Yasmin Harir Bhagavan Ijamana Ijatma Murtir Yajatam Sham Tanoti Kaman Amogan Stirajangamana Antarabahir Vayu Ivaisha Atma. Omagyana Timirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshuran Marutandina Tasman Shri Guravyani Maha. So, in the Bhagavad Gita, Ahamadir Hidevanam. Krishna says, I am the source of the demigods. The demigods are very powerful, but they are created and maintained and destroyed by the influence of the Supreme Lord. They have no separate, independent existence. They are all in the category of jivas, save and except Lord Shiva, who has his own category. But the other demigods are jiva souls, just like ourselves or any of the other jivas that are inhabiting bodies of trees or insects or animals. So their position constitutionally is that they're also part and parcel of the Supreme. And because of pious activities, they have been awarded the exalted position of demigods, 33 million demigods, to manage the universe. And of course they also have their assistants, but this is a big universe. Although this particular universe, it seems big to us, but compared to other universes, it's quite small. Still, it takes 33 million demigods, and they're all working under the direction of the Lord. In the Vedas, it says that the sun shines out of fear of the Lord, and the wind blows out of fear of the Lord. Because he is fear personified. He is feared by fear personified. He is superior. And there are so many examples. Even in Krishna's pastimes, in his most recent appearance, he showed by his dealings with King Indra, for example. King Indra, who is a devotee but sometimes becomes carried away by a little pride. He became proud because when one gets opulence and when one is worshipped as the demigods do, there's a tendency to think that one is more qualified and to forget that from where one is getting one's power. So Indra, who was being worshipped by the residents of Vrindavan by different yajñas, because he was supplying rain, that was his duty, but he forgot that where he was getting the power to supply the rain, and who allowed him to have the post, and by whose grace the residents of Vrindavan were worshipping him and offering sacrifice. He forgot all these things. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, "I'm dwelling in their hearts. For me come remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness." So Krishna knew he was a little proud, so he allowed him to forget the actual situation, so that a wonderful pastime could take place, the lifting of Govardhan Hill, just to rectify King Indra. And Indra came to his senses, because actually he's a devotee. And when he saw that Krishna was standing there as a little boy of 7 years, holding up Govardhan Hill for 7 days and nights with the baby finger of his left hand, not even the right hand, he could understand that this was not an ordinary boy, and the offenses that he had made by calling him talkative and trying to actually kill all the residents of Vrindavan took him quite some time, 7 days, to realize. You can see how much pride he had to cut through, because he was Indra and King of Heaven. No one can defeat me. But he was defeated in a very, very beautiful, gentle way. And this is our Krishna. And that's Krishna's dealings are so apt, perfectly gentle and fair. He's never unfair. Indra had rendered so much service, So he became a little bewildered. Oh, Krishna could have destroyed Indra in less than a moment. Indra, for Krishna, Indra is totally insignificant. Wouldn't have been at all difficult, even by his agency of Maya. He can destroy millions of Indras in a moment. But rather than destroy him, he thought, oh, let me protect my dependents, the residents of Braja. That is my first business. Paritranaya sadhunam. Though the greatest sadhus are the Brijabasis. Because they're the topmost level of devotion to Krishna. Rajya Bhagavan Brajesha Tanayas Taddhamam Vrindavanam Ramya Kachirupasana Vrajabhadu Vagena Vakalpita. They're the topmost devotees. So he had to protect them. That's his promise. Not his promise, but Arjuna's promise. Konteya pratijanihi name bhakta pranashiti. Krishna told Arjuna, you declare boldly that my devotee shall never be vanquished. And when a devotee makes a promise, then Krishna will make sure that that promise is not broken, even though sometimes he may have to break his own promise. So that promise he wanted to stand for all time. That is, my devotee shall always be protected. So he thought of this wonderful way by lifting Govardhan Hill as an umbrella, a novel umbrella, a big umbrella. We were just in Vrindavan just a short time ago and circumambulated Govardhan Hill for the first time. And that was quite an austerity for some of us who are used to sitting at desks and what have you. But it was very purifying, and the discussion was going on how Govardhan Hill has, you know, there was some curse, and so every day it's diminishing size of a sesame seed. So some of us with calculating minds in the past, we calculated. We estimate that at the time of Lord Krishna's presence, the hill must have been at least 10,000 feet. So 10,000 feet is quite a sizable hill. Not a small hill, but a big mountain. And you might think, well, lifting Govardhan Hill now as it is, that could be possible. But 10,000 feet high, but yes, according to that calculation. So it was a big mountain he lifted with no trouble. It wasn't even a strain for him. And even though the cowherd men and ladies, they thought that, and the other boys, that maybe we should help him. Someone suggested, shift it over. Why don't you let Subal hold it for a while? And Mother Yashoda thought that Nanda Maharaj must be holding up the hill, because how could Krishna do it? He's only 7 years old. It's obviously not possible. But he delighted all the residents. No one felt any, even the slightest distress while they were under the hill. And Indra finally learned his lesson. He came down. Airavata, his elephant carrier, and he offered his heartfelt prayers and obeisances and asked for forgiveness. Beautiful. So Krishna showed King of Heaven his position. And he showed Brahma. Brahma was very expert in mystic powers. Brahma has mystic powers. Amazing mystic powers. He can practically do anything he likes. And so he wanted to exhibit his mystic powers. But it was like a firefly trying to show off his illumination before the sun. Now, little fireflies, you know, you don't have them here. It's not warm enough. But in warm climates, you have these little fire bugs that have a little light bulb on their, in the back part, and it lights up. Amazing. It's nice at night when they're in the trees. They can only stay on for about 5 or 6 seconds. You know, a little, maybe, I don't know, 1/5 of a watt or something, 1/100 of a watt. This little light bulb goes on. It's very delightful. You see them going on and off. It's nice at night, but if in the daytime you think, all right, everyone's impressed with me at night. Now I'm going to show the sun a few things. So he comes out, noontime, all right, sun, look at this, watch. Insignificant. Totally out of place. Ridiculous. So similarly, Brahma, even though he's so powerful that everyone respects Brahma, when he tried to show his mystic power to the Lord not only defeated his mystic power, but did it in such a, again, a masterful way. First of all, Brahma took all the cowherd boys and cows and calves by his mystic power and put them in a cave, and then looked back the next moment. But there they were again, in the same place, the same ones. So then he looked back in the cave, and they were also there. And he looked back, he couldn't figure out, was someone taking the original ones and moving them back and forth real quick in between his looking? How could that be? Who could perform such a mystic feat? And then, to make things more complicated for Brahma, Krishna arranged that all those forms, who were actually himself, because they were expansions of himself, exhibited their four-handed Narayan features. So they all had all the cows and calves and cowherd boys became Narayan with four hands, and then others demigods, and others were worshiping them. And so this was too much for Brahma. He couldn't handle this. So he also had to admit defeat and come down to that little blue boy and offer his dandavats and pray for forgiveness. There are many examples. The demigods are great, but they're totally subordinate in every way to Krishna. Even Lord Shiva, great, powerful Shiva, Tripurari, who was able to defeat demon of Tripura, very powerful demon. Lord Shiva's, he doesn't like to fight, but if he has to fight, he's very powerful. And when he wants to devastate, he is the devastator. He's the annihilator of the whole universe at the time of dissolution. It is his responsibility. So, somehow or other, he felt obliged to support one of his very ardent disciples, Bana, who worshipped him very diligently. And when there was a fight between Bana and Krishna, Lord Shiva took the side of Bana and found himself fighting against Krishna. And once he was in that position, he wanted to win. And he was determined to win. And he used every weapon, including all the most powerful weapons. But Krishna was counteracting them with ease. So finally he sent his Shivajvara, a very powerful weapon that produces extraordinary heat, like the time of dissolution, 12 times hotter. But for Krishna, it wasn't very difficult. The Narayana Jvara weapon was sent to counteract, which produces excessive cold. And when the two weapons met, the Shiva Jvara, the heat weapon, gradually began to cool down more and more, and finally began to cry, crying out, "Help! Help!" Then Lord Shiva could understand that after he was defeated soundly by Krishna. Again, Krishna, he's dealing with his devotee. Lord Shiva is a great devotee, Vaishnavanam Dashambhu, greatest devotee. So the dealings were out of love and somewhat very affectionate, just like a father. If his little child comes up and challenges him or wants to wrestle or something, he may wrestle with him, but he's not going to hurt him. Even if the child may be somewhat belligerent and think, you know, "I'm going to defeat you today, father, because you didn't let me do this or that or whatever." So the father may wrestle and defeat the son, tie him up, bind him up, but he won't harm him. Okay, so now, son, what do you think now? You're all tied up and you're standing there. Your mouth is gagged. Why don't you say something? Out of love, he may make him look silly and show him, just to teach him a lesson. But he won't hurt him. So, demigods are in that position. They're very much appreciated by the Lord. When someone worships the demigods, however, it is called avidipurvakam. It's irregular. It's improper to worship the demigods directly, just as it's improper that when the tax collector comes to get the taxes from someone, the person invites him in and says, "Sit down, have a nice meal, and you know, I've opened, if you tell me the name of your son, I'll open a nice bank account for him, and we can give him some money for his future, and give a nice car." So this is a vidipurvakam. You're trying to bribe the tax collector. Shouldn't do that. It's against the law. When the tax collector comes, you give him the tax, which is meant for the government. But don't try to bribe him to get out of paying the taxes. In other words, your tax money must go to the king, must go to the government. Don't try to give it to tax collectors separately through some illegal way. If you do, you're in trouble. So in the same way, those who worship the demigods, that's what they're trying to do. They're thinking, instead of giving to the governor, the Krishna, the king, I'm going to bribe this tax collector, and maybe he'll give me some special benefits that the government wouldn't give me. This is the attempt. This is the mentality. It's a cheating mentality. Therefore, Krishna describes that those who worship the demigods are impelled by lusty desires. It's not that people worship the demigods because that's the way to worship Krishna directly. No, that's not the way. Just like you don't feed the stomach through the ear hole. That's not the direct way. Or sometimes when one is very diseased, they may do that, even through the rectum. They may feed you. It's not a very nice way of getting food, however. It's a very unnatural, not very pleasing way. So in the same way, if you're trying to get to Krishna or Vishnu, then you don't need to go through the ear and to the anus and through the other holes. You go directly by worshiping the Lord through the spiritual master. That is different. When you offer to the spiritual master, that is not a bribe. Because it's clear that the spiritual master is giving everything to Krishna. It is a different kind of representation than when one tries to bribe the demigods for some material gain. Because one shouldn't offer anything to the spiritual master expecting anything material in return. And the spiritual master will not be bribed. A bona fide spiritual master cannot be purchased by any amount of gifts or promises. He doesn't care for those things. He'll take whatever you give with love and devotion and offer it to Krishna, and without it, trying to enjoy it for himself. But sometimes the demigods, as we have heard, they may accept these bribes, and they may even reward them. It's like Lord Shiva once. He was being worshipped by one of his followers. And generally his followers are in the mode of ignorance, so they do things that are very grotesque. This worshipper, who was clearly in the mode of ignorance, thought that he, in order to please Lord Shiva, he had to offer flesh into a fire sacrifice. Fire. So, with that mentality, we learn from Bhagavad Gita, those in the mode of ignorance, they perform all these very violent acts, even to themselves and to others. So there he was, with a knife, sharp knife, cutting flesh from his body, trying to please Lord Shiva, offering it, Om Shivaya Namah, another, more flesh, cutting off more and more parts. Finally, he just kept going. He was so determined. An asinine determination to please Lord Shiva in this way. So finally, he had offered practically his whole body, and now he thought, still Lord Shiva hasn't come, so I will offer my head as a sacrifice. And he was just about to cut off his head. I don't know how he thought, or maybe throw it in, because that would have been difficult after he cut it. So he was just about to go with the head into the, whatever he had left, into the fire, thinking, Om Namo Shiva, and Shiva appeared. Oh, Vrika, what are you doing? I, you don't have to please, I'm not pleased by this, just give me a little Ganges water, I'm satisfied. Anyway, alright, what do you want? I'll come, I'll satisfy your desire, your benediction. Ashutosh. Ashutosh is a name for Lord Shiva. Easily satisfied. So, okay, Vrika, what do you want? I'll give you. He says, give me the power that whosoever head I touch with my finger will crack into 1,000 pieces. So Lord Shiva, all right, take it. So, demon that he was, he became too much lusty, and he thought, well, let me finish off Lord Shiva first. So he tried to touch Lord Shiva's head to kill him. Just see what the mentality is. See what kind of, this is the demigod worship. I'll worship you, I'll get the power, and then I'll get rid of you, and I'll take your position. This is the mentality. Well, he had to be saved by Lord Krishna. Krishna had to incarnate as a brahmachari and trick Vrika into touching his own head to test out the potency of the benediction. And he did. He touched his own head. The Lord convinced him that Lord Shiva was giving out bogus benedictions. He said, didn't you know? Everyone knows. He's giving out all kinds of bogus benedictions. They have no powers. Did you didn't know? Everyone else knows. It's all, I thought everyone knew. Anyway, if you don't believe, why don't you just, first of all, you should check and see that it's in fact bogus, and then you should really chastise him. So, in this way, he was tricked and he died. But then Lord Shiva came and thanked him, and you know, appreciating you saved me. And the Lord said, yes, but please don't give out these ridiculous benedictions anymore. So sometimes the demigods give out these kind of benedictions very easily, material things. But Lord Krishna doesn't do that. He doesn't give benedictions that will bind up the worshiper and make him more sinful. And things. Krishna gives benedictions which will purify the worshiper. Even if one asks for material benedictions from Krishna, it's better than going to the demigods, because Krishna will give the material benediction in such a way that the worshiper will become purified and become a pure devotee. That's the difference between the demigods and Krishna. So, stop there. Thank you. Are there any questions? Usually the right hand is stronger if someone is right-handed. Most people are right-handed. So I was being a little bit facetious, in the sense that generally speaking, if a person's right-handed, Krishna was showing that Indra, you're such an insignificant demigod, I won't even use my right hand. I'll use the left hand. And the baby finger is not considered the most significant of fingers. You know, if you want to hold on to something or lift something, you use your middle fingers, which are strong, but you use the baby finger, the littlest one. So in other words, just to make it clear, Indra, you're very insignificant. That was his point.
Said that Lord Shiva is not Jiva, but he is something else.
Shiva.
But what is he?
Shiva.
Yeah.
Shiva Tattva.
That's a different kind of...
Brahma Samhita describes, Lord Brahma describes, the Lord Shiva, Shambhu. He's like yogurt. Yogurt is nothing but milk, but it's also different. You can't use yogurt exactly like milk. So simultaneously, he's nothing but Vishnu, but at the same time, he's not Vishnu. He's Shiva. His position is in between the Jivas and Vishnu. He's not Vishnu Tattva, and he's not Jiva Tattva. He has his own Tattva.
He's not the marginal energy.
No.
There are four energies.
Well, there are many energies. But those are some of the prominent ones, yes. Three main energies: the external energy, the internal energy, and the marginal energy. But then, yes, there's also Shiva Tattva.
Are there more reasons to come to Krishna? You mentioned one. There are more reasons?
More reasons than?
Just the material benefit.
Are there other reasons to come to Krishna? Material. In other words, you're saying that if we worship Krishna, well, we can get material benefits that will help us to become purified. Is that what you mean?
Yes.
So what are the other reasons? Yeah, the other reasons are you can get spiritual benefits too, which the demigods cannot award, such as eternal liberation. Brahma frankly admitted that I can't give liberation because I'm also subject to death. But Mukunda, or Krishna, Mukunda is another name for Krishna, he can give liberation. And he can give eternity, knowledge, and bliss, which no demigod can give. Those are the big reasons. And Krishna himself is so attractive, and his activities and his abode are just so extraordinary that even the demigods, they don't want to stay in the material, they want to also go and join. Everyone wants to go there who is intelligent. Because that's the happy place. That's the happening place. That's where everything happens. Even when the material universes are all closed up inside Mahavishnu for a long time, the party's still going on in the spiritual world, and Krishna's abode. Yeah?
I tend to see the compound. It's actually very deeply rooted.
I didn't hear it. Tendency to? To be proud.
So if you do little service, then sometimes you want to do it as good as possible. Because after that you think, oh, yes, I did, you know. But then this is like it's such an impediment for devotional spirits to make progress.
That's all right. Krishna knows how to deal with our pride. He's very expert at that. He does it very masterfully, very dramatically. As soon as we become, just like even Srimati Radharani, the pastime is there. That Krishna took her away from the company of the other gopis, and she was thinking, now of all the gopis, Krishna has specifically taken me. My position is very fortunate. She was feeling, at least as Prabhupada expresses, there was some, maybe a little pride. So Krishna, even with Radharani, wanted to help her or to encourage her to not feel proud of her position, even though she is the greatest and even though Krishna did go with her alone. So he said, you just climb on my shoulder and I'll take you. So then in the next moment he disappeared, and then she was left to realize, oh, I became proud. So Krishna, please come back. So Krishna did that to increase and enhance her eagerness to have Krishna. That was a purification arrangement by Krishna and also pastime. So Krishna also deals with us very personally, and when we become a little proud or a lot proud, then he will disappear or seem further away to encourage us. Oh Krishna, I've lost you now. I'm feeling bereft without Krishna consciousness. What happened to my, I thought I was so advanced, and now I realize I'm in Maya. So Krishna, he'll make it apparent that we shouldn't be proud. Of course, that's one way. But if you're sincerely praying and trying to do your service without pride, humble. One should always be meek and humble. Six principles of Sharanagati, surrender. And one of them is to always remain very meek and humble. Always remember, another one is, always remember that we're completely dependent upon the mercy of the Lord. Otherwise, there's this story of Punarmushito Bhava. You know, there was a mouse, and the mouse was being troubled by a cat, so he went to a sage, and he asked for the benediction that he could be turned into a cat. So the sage gave him. He went away as a cat, and then he came back. He was being chased by a dog. So he asked for the benediction to be turned into a dog, and the sage agreed. Then came back, there was a lion. So he asked to be turned into a lion, he got that. And then, as a lion, he was feeling different emotions towards the sage. Because lions, they can eat humans. So he was thinking, now I'm a lion, big and powerful, I can eat you. And he was thinking like that. So the sage could understand, oh, you want to eat me? He said, yes. He said, all right, become again a mouse. Punarmushito Bhava. And he became again a mouse. So by the grace of Krishna and the spiritual master, one can become very powerful. But if he forgets his position and he thinks that now I can replace, now I'm independently powerful, then he'll become a mouse again. He'll become insignificant. That's Krishna's mercy, and that's the mercy of the spiritual master. Pumping gas. There was one very graphic example in our movement. There was one sannyasi, very dear to Srila Prabhupada. Wonderful. Top position, Prabhupada said. The highest, most honored position in society, respected by everyone, sannyasi, everything wonderful, but he gave it up. And then Prabhupada received a report. What is he doing now? He said that he's pumping gas in Denver. So Prabhupada just lamented. Come again, a mouse. So that's what pride can do.
If Shiva is the greatest of all Vaishnavas, then what is the difference between him and the inhabitants of Vrindavan?
No difference. If you worship him as a Vaishnav, if you worship him in order to develop your love for Krishna, then there's no difference. And he has his own sampradaya, Rudra sampradaya, and he's worshipped in that way. But unfortunately, the Shaivites, those who worship him, they don't worship him like that. They worship him as supreme, and they want to imitate him. It's all irregular. They imitate, they put ashes, and they take ganja, and they smoke that, and they carry tridents. Well, who said? Why should they carry tridents? What are they going to do with a trident? Why do they have to put ashes on the... Lord Shiva has his reasons. He has wonderful reasons for why he's doing these. He's saving all the fallen souls. They're not saving any ghostly persons. They're just becoming affected by the mode of ignorance, by all these imitations, caricatures. If they actually would worship Lord Shiva as a pure Vaishnava, as he does, then they would make spiritual advancement.
Is there somewhere in the Vedas said that certain devotees should think?
Yes, if you read Mahabharata, for example, or the Vedas, you'll become confused. And you'll think that Agni is supreme, and then you'll think Indra is supreme, and then you'll think Brahma is supreme, and you won't know who's supreme. And that's the problem with Hinduism, is by studying the Vedas without the guidance of a bona fide spiritual master, it's very easy to become confused. And therefore they are confused. They think everyone's supreme, so they worship all the demigods. They don't want to miss any, because they don't know who's supreme. That's why Srila Prabhupada is so merciful, because he came and very simply presented, yes, Krishna is supreme, and like that, he gave the whole hierarchy. Demigods are also powerful, but they are all subordinate. And who's Vishnu? Because that's another problem. Well, we worship Krishna and Ram. Krishna and Ram are okay, yes. What about Vishnu is okay? What about Durga? No, she's not supreme. So they don't know this principle of Vishnu Tattva and Jiva Tattva and the demigods. But it's bewildering. Therefore, Krishna told Arjuna, you have to go beyond the flowery words of the Vedas and just follow my instructions. Otherwise, it's easy to get confused.
How do we classify those energies of the Lord, Radharani and Maya?
Radharani is, there is a description, Prabhupada describes in one of his purports, that she is considered to be in the Vishnu category. Expansion of the Lord. Lakshmi is an expansion of Radharani, and she's an expansion of Krishna, but she's to be worshipped. Others consider her in the Shakti Tattva, but one of the Acharya said she should be understood in the Vishnu category. So that's, of course, very high. We're really getting up there. Internal potency of the Lord. Pleasure potency of the Lord. Hare Krishna. That's why we chant Hare Krishna, because we're invoking not only Krishna, but also Srimati Radharani.
Sense qualification is not sinful. But I don't quite understand if this is true.
It's not sinful. They don't get sinful reactions, but they do use up their pious credits. In other words, they have so much pious credits. Just like, for example, let's say someone earns a lot of money and he goes to Hawaii. He's got tons of money. So he goes to Hawaii, he's paying everything on credit card, he's enjoying like anything. He's not breaking the law. It's all legal. It's legal. But when he is, after he's used up all of his money, all the credit, you know, just charged everything, and finally say, sir, you have no more in your account. Then what? Shine punye marcha lokam vishana. Then he has to go back to work. Now, the other side is, someone else is in Hawaii, he has no money, he's using a phony credit card, and he's charging through some scheme, he's sinful. He's acting against the law. He may be enjoying, like the demigod, they may be doing the same thing. But he's guilty for that, because he has no right. basically, so guilty, not guilty, sinful, not sinful. See, these are all dualities of the material world. And as long as one is acting in a material way, he's implicated in the results. Yagyartat karma non yatra, loko yam karma bandana. Taratam karma kontiyam mukta sangha samachara. Work done as a sacrifice for Vishnu has to be performed. Otherwise, work binds one to this material world. So their activity, although not sinful, is binding. Because they're also becoming attached to enjoying on that level. And then when it goes away, then, oh, they lament. They have to come down and shine punyi marcha lokam vishanti.
But if someone in this world engages in sense gratification, that is also due to karma, it's given us. So then he's not sinful, or he doesn't get sinful in action.
That is a special prerogative. There is a certain kind of... See, in other words, they follow what their codes are. There are rules and regulations for demigods. When one reaches that platform, there's a certain amount, just like they can drink somaras. That is a kind of a reward. And there are other rewards. Indra has so many... In fact, it's even described that they don't produce children on the heavenly planets the same way. They can have sex, and then the child comes in the last year of the demigod's life, and the child immediately... So they don't have to go through a lot of the problems that we do to get sense gratification, because that is specifically for them. Rules and regulations for demigods, when one reaches that platform, there's a certain amount, just like they can drink somaras. That is a kind of a reward. And there are other rewards. Indra has so many... In fact, it's even described that they don't produce children on the heavenly planets the same way. They can have sex, and then the child comes in the last year of the demigod's life, and the child immediately... So they don't have to go through a lot of the problems that we do to get sense gratification, because that is specifically for them. But if one follows the Karmakandya system as given in the Vedas, then he's also not sinful, even though he's getting sense gratification. But that just like a Kshatriya. For a Kshatriya, if a woman comes to him and begs, please give me a son, there are certain rules and regulations. But he must do it. He must give her a son. If he doesn't, he's guilty. Now, of course, in the process of giving her a son, there will be some sense gratification that he's going to get. That's part of his dharma. Now, someone else thinks, I'll dress up like a Kshatriya and I'll... take advantage of that opportunity, then he'll be sinful because he's not actually qualified. There are rules and regulations for enjoyment, according to the Vedas, and if one follows them, then he's not considered sinful. But he's not considered very intelligent either. Because even if you follow the rules and regulations for sense gratification in the material world, you're not considered very intelligent because you're being bound up by the results.
But isn't it always sinful?
In one sense, yes. In one sense, anything you do in the material world is considered bad. Therefore, we don't accept the dualities. Oh, this is good and that's bad. It's all bad. And everything in spiritual life is all good. There's no bad. It's all transcendental.
We read so many instances that demigods are very much actually cursing, although they are devotees, but for example, members of Sankirtan Union, they, as far as I know, they never curse no one. So, what's the difference?
Well, Narad Muni sometimes curses. He's a member of the Sankirtan movement. But his curses are all benedictions. They're all good for the people. But when one curses, one has to be prepared to lose some of his potency too, perhaps. So better not to curse. Better. And anyway, we're not so powerful that we can afford to curse. And we're not so like Narad Muni. He cursed. Just see how his curse worked out. He cursed the sons of Kuvera to stand as trees, but where? In the courtyard of Nandamaraj. Now, could you arrange such a curse? A perfect... He knew exactly... This was quite some time before also. He knew exactly where Nandamaraj would establish his courtyard and just how far the tree should be apart so that grinding mortar would get stuck just in between. Could you make such a perfect curse calculation that it would all and that the Krishna would come and he would be chastised by his mother and pull the trees because he would be angry that day at her and he wanted to do something. But Narad could figure all these things out. When we curse someone, it's usually not quite so well thought out. Just go to hell, you know. We have to catch ourselves, especially if you're Brahmins, because... You know. Yes, Bhakti.
Other in Kali Yuga also vices and Kshatriyas?
Excuse me?
Other in Kali Yuga also vices and Kshatriyas?
Are there...
Also vices and Kshatriyas in Kali
Yuga. Are there vices and Kshatriyas? Yes.
In Kali Yuga.
Yeah, there can be. Right now, there doesn't seem to be. Prabhupada said once, well, I won't say where, but there was one particular country where there was a woman, you know, prime minister. So Prabhupada said if there was even one Kshatriya present on the planet, this wouldn't be going on. So more or less, it doesn't seem like there's any real Kshatriyas. Maybe something, some faint glimmer. Like in Jaipur, right, they take the sword. They take the sword and they fight with the lion and they kill the lion. So Prabhupada appreciated that. That's still somewhat Kshatriya mentality, but not like Arjuna, the big Kshatriyas. But they can be trained. The Brahmanas can train them by using the Vedas. We can study the Vedas and see how the Kshatriyas are supposed to, what is their mentality, how they're supposed to be.
Is it necessary for the demigod to fall down and beg? Is it possible that since the soul cannot be satisfied by any amount of sense gratification, that he still feels frustrated and cultivate Krishna consciousness again and again?
I didn't get the first part. He falls back?
Yes. Or is it possible that he, feels still not satisfied by all this amount of sense gratification?
Oh yeah, it's like a Ferris wheel. Sometimes he's up enjoying as a demigod and then he loses it and he comes back down again and sometimes goes up again. This can go on for millions of lifetimes. It's called samsara Ferris wheel.
Seems that the question is, can one go back to Godhead directly from the heavenly planet?
Is that the question?
Yeah.
Oh yes. Yes, one can go back. Brahma goes back directly, and he's in Satyaloka. Generally, Brahma goes back if he's a pure devotee. And not only does he go back, but all the devotees that are there on his planet, they go back with him at the end. So yes, it is possible. Especially Brahma, who's very vigilant. He's not so much into the more flamboyant activities. So maybe this will be the last question. Yeah. Excuse me?
There's one resolution in the GDC, or one few states in the GDC resolution about his demigod worship. Because they speak about his such a Narayana Kata, which is a cocoa form of worship. They say this is not allowed to eat from cocoa. What is such a stuff?
Some Indian form of worship, I don't
know. They speak about the Garba dance, which is conducted in association with worship of Durga.
And what do they say about it?
Well, it's not allowed in ISKCON property. That's
okay.
It's not explained.
Well, there's many. That's this point. There's many popular ceremonies and events and forms of worship that go on in the Hindu communities which are not strictly Vaishnav. And if we condone these things just to, you know, just to accommodate them and to make friends, that's not what Prabhupada established. Our movement is for pure Krishna bhakti, and we don't want to mix in any Durga pujas and different other things that will compromise our position as pure bhaktas of Krishna. We cannot imitate the gopis who are worshipping Katyayani, because they're their contemplation was only to get Katyayani to let them become wives of Lord Krishna. So when we're performing, you know, the Garbha dances, it's not to become the wife of Lord Krishna. It may be just out of ignorance or passion. That's not pure. So we have to be vigilant about these things too.
What is a Garbha dance?
Oh, well, they have some, you know, sticks and they do like that. It's beautiful, but there's many beautiful things in this world which may not be acceptable as pure Vishnu bhakti. I don't know much about Garbha dance. I guess that's good.
It's a fertility ritual that's performed, especially in Bombay, for marriages. They do these dances, like in the road, you know. So since we have wedding parties in our temples in Bombay quite often, because there's a lot of income to the restaurant, the Garbha dances sometimes tend to move from the street into the temple. So I know that the Garbha dance one is relating to the Bombay situation. Such an Arankatai.
Then it says at the end that that for their own ceremonies and functions, even for those functions, like Garbha and Satyarang, they can be done on the ISKCON property, provided that the public understands, you know, clearly that the functions are responsible for conducting ISKCON. So we can allow them on that. But at the same time, this is, as I said, shouldn't be contrary to four related principles. But this can very easily mix this up. So I don't know why. Is it just for money?
Well, I suggest that if you want further clarification, that you could discuss this with the governing body commissioners. There's two for the Benelux. And that's their specific area. They were at the meetings. They were there for all the discussions. We weren't there for all the discussions. I'm not so much involved in these things. But I think if you discuss with your GBC man, that would be very nice. They could clarify. And that's their responsibility to do also. Okay. So we'll stop there. Thank you very much. Grantara Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Hare Krishna.